Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Quarrygate Gambit by Marshall Ryan Maresca, narrated by Dan Kelly. Prelude. Arrests of Jubilation. Chapter 1. Asti Reinex's plan was going perfectly. Every piece was in place. Every one of his people were exactly where they needed to be, doing exactly what they should. But there were so many details swimming in his head that as he crossed through the back alley to Frost Road, he didn't even see the kid with the knife until it was right at his throat.
"You're coin, old man."
"Old man, really?" Asti asked.
"You heard me,"
the kid snapped.
"Hand it over, all right."
"I mean, I only just turned 27, Asti said, keeping his voice even. Being called old was quite upsetting. "That's not really old at all, son."
"What you on about?"
the kid said, pressing his knife up on Asti's chin.
"I told you, coin, or I cut you."
"See, you already showed me you don't want to," Asti said. "Else you'd just cut me and search my pockets as I bled."
"I'm serious."
"So am I," Asti said. "I mean, who even taught you? You're not even holding it right."
"What?"
Asti didn't have time for this, but it really was just sad. No form, no technique. "Look," Asti said, taking the kid's wrist and twisting it away from his neck. "You don't want me to be able to do that. And you let me for a couple reasons." The kid cried out and dropped the knife, which Asti caught in his offhand.
"Hey, ow,"
the kid said, as Asti kept his wrist in the lock. "See, right? That hurts a lot," Asti said. "You got too close. And that means you had nothing to thrust with and I could reach past your knife and grab you. Part of the point of having a blade, especially in a situation like this, is you're able to keep the other person at a distance. They don't close in on you because they don't want to get cut."
"The places you want to bet."
"I'm talking about technique, son," Asti said, releasing the kid and pushing him up against the brick wall. He looked at the blade, checking its edge with his thumb. Dull and nicked. "Did you really just grab any knife you could find and come out to an alley? Honestly, who does that?"
"I was just..."
"Look at this, all wrong," Asti said, showing the kid the blade. "Especially if you get in close, put it at someone's neck. You do that, you can only swipe fast to slice my throat, and this blade has no edge for slicing at all. At best, you're going to scratch up someone's neck and just rise up their temper. Then you're in for it."
"What?"
This kid really had no idea what would happen if he rose up Asti's temper. The beast in his skull. It was simple to keep it held by a chain right now. He kept that thing in check every day, through fights or catastrophes where it howled to be let loose. While it wanted to gut this boy open were it allowed, Asti had no trouble holding it down. Certainly he saw no need to hurt this kid, who clearly had no one to teach him anything. Asti threw the knife down the alley and drew out one of his own. "See this one? I've kept honed." He put it in the kid's palm and then wrapped his fingers properly around the hilt. "Feel that. Feel the weight in your hand like that. You've got a good grip."
"I don't..."
"And now?" Asti grabbed the kid's wrist and twisted. "See, you don't let go. You're still in control. Someone's got you like this, you throw a solid punch. You do know how to punch, don't you, kid?"
"What is happening?"
the kid asked, tears coming to his eyes. "Saint Senia, I just want some standards," Asti said. "There's no one teaching you this. Where are you coming from, kid?"
"I..."
"This alley isn't your patch, is it? I know most of the boys your age around here on sight. Blazes, he had some of them scouting for him right now. You shouldn't be wasting time with this. Where are you from?"
"Benson Court."
"Your people didn't teach you any of..." "Saints above, kid." He took a step back, taking a few coins out of his pocket. "I got somewhere to be right now, but you take this. You go back home for the night. Stay out of North Selleth altogether here. You're going to get hurt doing this." Asti put the coins in the kid's hand, only about half a crown's worth in total. Nothing really. The kid just stared at his hand.
"What is happening?"
"Tomorrow, 8 bells in the morning, you meet me at Kimber's around the corner, and I'll show you how to really use that knife."
"I'm keeping this knife."
"Yeah, but don't try anything until I show you. You'll hurt yourself," Asti said. "I need to move, kid. 8 bells. Asti went on his way, the kid still standing dumbfounded as he left the alley and turned onto Frost. The sun was nearly set, the golden red light drawn out over the cobblestone, drenching the street in warmth. For the most part, things had been good in this neighbourhood over the past few months, and tonight, the plans he and his brother Versi had been tolling over were coming to fruition.
"Final target is in sight, Mr. Rolex,"
one kid said as he ran up. We got boys keeping eyes on each one of them. Good work, kid, Asti said. Get back out there and make sure everyone is getting steered where they need to, eh? Head bus, the kid said, and he ran off. Asti went into Kimber's pub, a place that wasn't quite a home to him, but served as one enough times that he was comfortable with it. And it was the best place for this plan to go down. And unlike the last time he set up something to shake down here, this one shouldn't end with any broken tables or glasses. At least not too many.
Asti Renex, there you are.
Asti was surprised to find Kejaz Nafarth, the Poasian spice merchant and double-crossing spy, here in Kimber's pub. This was exactly the sort of place that Nafarth never came into. Asti had barely even seen him out of his spice shop, and this was the absolute last place he needed to have this man right now. Nafarth was an unpleasant sort on a good day when Asti wanted information out of him. Here and now, when Asti had a plan in motion, it was beyond inconvenient. Why are you even here?
I'm hearing things, Asti Ranex, that make me very worried.
As am I, and it's your voice, Asti said.
I think you may be in danger.
I'm pretty much always in danger, but it's nice to know you care, Asti said. Nafarth had taken more of a focused interest in him in the past months, usually while keeping a respectful distance, and never before coming out to find him like this. Asti didn't like it, but he didn't deny that Nafarth was usually worth listening to.
I don't have a lot of time, so how pressing is this?
I'm not sure, Nafarth said. I hear whispers. They rarely come with timetables.
Tonight I'm busy, Asti said. If all goes well, then come meet me here tomorrow at 8. Make that 9 bows, and you can tell me all about it. Nafarth thought on this for a moment, and then two other people came down from the room upstairs. He must have thought better of being in close proximity to so many druth folk, and stepped away.
Tomorrow. But be wary, Asti.
Always I am, Asti said. In the taproom, Kimber was shaking her head at Asti.
What did he want?
I neither know nor care, Asti said. The important thing is he's not ruining the plan.
This plan of yours better not wreck my place, she said.
I'll be here in the morning to help you clean, he said. I'm expecting some meetings at 8 and 9 bells respectively, but beyond that, I'm all yours. Her usual warm smile turned a little sad.
You actually believe that, don't you?
Should I?
Doesn't matter, she said. Help me move the tables where you need them.
Of course, he said. He glanced at the door as it opened. Alma Court, the chemist and apothecary, followed by actors and con men, Pilsen Gin and Velen Kolsch came in, dressed and ready for tonight.
Perfect. We better hurry. Versi and Rach will be here soon.
Kimber rolled her eyes.
I can't believe she agreed to this.
Agreed, Asti said. She insisted. Versi had not been prepared for how heavy the crate was going to be. He certainly couldn't carry it alone, and since the contents were so delicate, he wouldn't dare.
Easy, easy,
Rach said as she was lifting her end.
Just a little further end.
Is it in place to slide it?
He asked, sweat already on his brow. He had no idea it would weigh this much, or how Rach didn't seem to be struggling as much as he was.
And there,
she said, letting her side down on the back of the cart.
Go ahead.
He pushed. Saints, how could it weigh this much? And slid it so it rested comfortably in the back of the cart.
You couldn't get a horse to pull it?
Rach asked him as she came around.
There was no way to get one without drawing more attention, he said. People would wonder why we got a horse for this.
People are going to wonder why you're pulling it either way, dear, she said.
He sighed.
So I have to pull.
You most definitely have to pull, my love, she said with a laugh.
She kissed him on his cheek as she threw a tarp over the crate.
That will only make it a little less conspicuous.
You should go on ahead then, Versi said.
Nothing of the sort, she said. I'm walking right by your side, not taking my eyes off this thing. Besides, you will look conspicuous all by yourself. It's just your nature. You always look like you're up to something.
Fair, he said.
He often had been up to something. He still was, frankly, though not as blatantly in recent days.
I've thought about it. If I'm walking with you, I can keep a hand on the crate, make sure it doesn't slide or bump, as that would be...
A disaster, Versi said.
An absolute disaster. Plus...
The cover is making deliveries for the bakery, he conceded. With you right with me, that's a lot more believable. But hopefully no one asks.
Better get moving. Asti is waiting.
Versi took off his vest and handed it to her. Wouldn't do to get it grimy and sweaty before the plan tonight. He was of half a mind to take off his shirt completely.
Don't even, she said, clearly knowing what he was thinking.
I can't be looking like a pig, he said.
It suits me that you're not looking too handsome tonight, she said, raising her eyebrow. Even tonight I wouldn't want anyone else swooning over you.
He grabbed her by her waist and pulled her in, kissing her.
You're the only one I want swooning.
Her eyes danced a bit as they met his.
Oh, if only we had a bit more time right now.
We'll make a bit of time later, he said. Our own celebration.
I like the way you think, Mr. Rynex, she said.
You're damn well better, Mrs. Rynex, he said, and lifted up the handles of the cart and pulled it out into the street.
Rach chuckled quietly to herself as they went, keeping her steadying hand on the crate, as promised. He wasn't sure if that would really help, but it was comforting. Everything about her was comforting, to have her there walking alongside him tonight. He was glad to have her with him here, just the two of them, while her sister watched little Corsi for the night. He was so lost in those thoughts, he barely even noticed when Lieutenant Kovrain walked right in front of him.
Evening, Rynexes, the constable said with the tip of his cap. This seems like a lot. It certainly is, Percy said. Quite a sizable crate you're hauling, he said. What's that all about? Bread's for a few of the inns and pubs along the dog rides, Percy said. At this hour.
He would be astounded at the demand for fresh bread for the suppers, Rach said.
And you load it in a crate like this?
It actually keeps the warmth and moisture in balance, Rach said. I would not have any bread of mine be dry or soggy.
I guess you wouldn't, ma'am, he said. We need to be moving, Percy said as Kovrain leaned in as if to smell the bread. He would not get that smell from the crate, and the whole game would be ruined.
I imagine Helen is waiting for you, Lieutenant, Rach said. She's probably quite eager to see you.
And so are her, he said with a grin. I should be off and won't keep you.
He went off, and Versi started pulling along again.
Well done.
Thank you.
We would have been skunked if he took a proper whiff of the crate.
I imagine so, she said. But what did your father say about a job getting skunked, as you say?
To drive forward and get it done, Versi said.
Capital advice. Drive on. We need to get there before it's too late. You're late.
Helen Kesser wanted to be annoyed at Jarrett Kovrain. She desperately wanted to, as he arrived at her front stoop a good 10 minutes after the agreed-upon time. Jarrett had so many wonderful qualities, but being punctual to any planned rendezvous was never one of them. She wanted to be annoyed, but something about his face tied all that up. She couldn't get mad looking at it. There was...
One more call or such, I know. Julian already went ahead.
Do I have time to change? He asked, crossing into the apartment. Or do you want me to go in my uniform?
Be quick about it, she said,
though he was already taking off his coat. In the past months, more than a few of his clothes had managed to stay here, which Helen's mother would have found positively scandalous. Helen didn't care about scandalous, though. She just cared about this shop, the apartments over the shop, her cousin Julian. And most improbably, this constabulary lieutenant who was hanging his uniform coat up in her front room. How she had ever fallen so completely for this man was beyond her, and the fact that he apparently felt the same way for her. Her, Helen Kesser, lifelong North Sellis screw-up who was known by half the crime bosses in West Maradane as being one of the best crossbow slingers south of the river, and also known as too much trouble to ever put on a job. She had run in more heists than she could count and burned more bridges than she could remember. And despite that, this constable, an upstanding statue of a man, had fallen for her, in no small part due to the fact that he respected a good crossbow.
So what is this even about again? He called as he splashed water on his face.
We're having dinner with a new importer Julian is excited about, she said. Brings him Wish and Kieran cheeses, and Julian wants to lock down a deal with him.
Kovrain came out, stripped to the waist. Saints, that took her breath every time.
So why doesn't he just do that? He needs us.
You know Julian?
I do, Kovrain said. When it comes to your shop, and especially the subject of cheese, he's on top of it.
Contracts and numbers fluster him, she said. He gets really worried that without me there, he would trap us in a bad deal.
Kovrain came in close.
So he wants you there, and you want me there.
He kissed her. The sort of kiss that made her want to move to more things. And there was certainly no time for them to do anything like that, at least not before this dinner. She pushed him away before she would have to pull him to the bed.
Get dressed, fool.
Yes, ma'am, he said with a smile that made her blood rush. He quickly grabbed a shirt and coat and put them on, and he looked reasonably presentable. He still looked like a stick, even out of uniform, but nothing would change that.
You've got to leave the belt here, she said.
If I must, he said, taking off his patrol belt with his hand stick and crossbow, and left it on her table. Ready?
What do you think? She asked. You haven't said anything about how I look.
She had bothered with face painting for this evening and was wearing a nice dress that had been used for some scouting gig or another. It may have been the one she wore the night they robbed and burned down Tyne's Emporium, designed with extra panels so Versi Rhynax could hide the parts of a mini crossbow within it. She was not hiding any weapons tonight. All her crossbows were still in the apartment, safely away in their trunk. She hadn't had cause to use them in months, not since the night with the fire mages.
You look incredible as always, he said, taking her gloved hand.
She almost always wore the glove on that hand now, with a wooden insert to hide her missing finger. Not that the glove was any less conspicuous, but she preferred that was what people saw.
Then let's not leave him waiting, she said. I think we need to get out to the Little East.
Do we need a cab? He asked as they walked out.
Good luck flagging one down on this street, she said. Maybe walk to Keller Cove and catch one there, but...
That was all she got out when some ratty street kid, just dashed through them both, snatched Kovrain's coin bag, and was off down the street. Helen was already running after him, and Kovrain was three paces behind.
Thought you said we'd walk, he called after her.
Can't let that gutter snap pull that, she said.
Though when she was that kid's age, she dared exactly this sort of thing plenty of times.
I could put out a call.
No one would come in this patch, she said.
She thought Kovrain would realise, even now, even after that big brawl in St. Bridget's Square a couple months back. Saying she was glad she hadn't been nearby for that one. There were never many sticks in these blocks, and any whistle call would almost always go ignored, especially at this hour. She followed the kid around an alley, down a ways, and saw him slip into the back door of Kimber's pub. She was so intent on that she didn't even notice Kenneth Real running from the other direction until she collided into him.
Whoa,
she said, bouncing off the dark Chemic man. She would have landed flat on her backside if Kovrain hadn't been there to catch her. Kenneth had stumbled back from the impact as well, caught and held stable by Jekyll Ra, the native-born Chemic woman he had been courting for some time.
Sorry, Hal, he said, brushing himself off. Didn't see you there.
Likewise, she said, but the fact that he had been running too, running into the same alley from the other direction, that was just plain odd.
Why were you? A Jiqui boy grabbed my bag and dashed here,
Jekyll said. She glanced at Kovrain and nodded her head deferentially.
Your pardon, officer.
Not on duty, he said, but we shouldn't let those boys get away with either of our things.
He went for the door into the pub.
Boys,
Helen muttered. Something did not sit right about this. She looked to Kenneth, who was dressed in a clean suit, but that wasn't uncommon on a night where he was driving the carriage for the North Selleth Inn.
Where were you two headed?
Heading to the Little East to have supper with her cousins, Kenneth said. We were just on our way.
When the urchin grabbed a bag and ran, Helen said.
Saints and sinners both, she couldn't believe it.
You know what this is, don't you?
Aye,
Kenneth stammered. Kovrain and Jekyll had already gone in. She sighed and followed, Kenneth right with her. The back door led through a corridor past the water closets to the tap room, which was surprisingly empty. That was an absolute sign that something hinky was up. The tap room at Kimber's pub was never empty.
Where did they?
Kovrain asked, glancing about.
Something odd indeed, Jekyll said. Saints,
Helen muttered. Raising her voice, she said,
Fine, you got us.
At once, folks leaped out from behind the bar, from the kitchen, from behind tables, from everywhere.
Surprise!
Kovrain, to his credit, jumped just a bit. All around her, familiar faces. Kimber smiling so broadly with such joy. Versi Rhynax and his wife Rach wheeling out a giant cake from the kitchens. Julian, grinning like an absolute fool. Alma Court, Pilsen Gin, Velen Kolsch, and a dozen other faces she knew far too well, and more she didn't, including Chemic folks who were likely kin to Jekyll. and Asti Reinax, leaning against the doorway, looking as happy as his face would let him express, which was only a hair of joy above, not angry.
"What is this?"
Kenneth asked. Percy Reinax, looking far too smug, came up with a tray holding four glasses of wine.
"This is a celebration of each of you," he said, handing them all their glasses. "From all of us, your dear friends and neighbours, to raise a glass together to you and for you, and wish hearty congratulations and blessings on your respective futures together, so we can mark the jubilant occasion of your impending marriages. So raise glasses high, one and all, to the engagements of Helen Kesser and Jarrett Covrain, and Kenneth Rill and Jacole Ra of House Geckham, daughter of Hedja Cha, daughter of Kessel Amra."
The crowd all raised their glasses and cheered, blazing Percy Reinax, always a flair for the rutting dramatic. Chapter 2. So raise glasses high, one and all, to the engagement of Helen Kesser and Jarrett Covrain, and Kenneth Rill and Jocol Ra of House Geckham, daughter of Hedja Cha, daughter of Kessel Amra. The crowd cheered, and Percy was quite pleased with how well the whole ploy had gone. Yes, Helen had figured out what was going on, but it was obvious she had just figured it out only moments before. So the whole affair was, by his definition, a masterful success. He actually would have been a little disappointed in Helen if she hadn't.
"Really, what is this?" Covrain asked, still holding his wine glass like he didn't know what to do with it.
"It's a party, Jarrett," Helen growled. "For us, and Ken and Joe."
"Do not be so loose with my name," Jacole said.
She grinned.
"But you, Percy Reinax, I'm impressed with your respect of my mother's."
Percy leaned in.
"I did have to make sure to get it right. Well, those cousins of yours over there might have had issue."
"You don't want them to have issue," Kenneth said. He grabbed Percy by the shoulder and pulled him in for an embrace.
"Thank you for this, though."
"There is the matter of my coin purse," Covrain said.
"And my bag."
"Asti," Percy called out.
"Boys,"
Asti called in return. The two street urchins came out of hiding from behind the bar, sheepish grins on their faces, giving Covrain and Jacole back their things.
"Sorry, mister,"
the one kid said to Covrain. Covrain crouched down and said,
"Let's make that the last time you do that, son, all right?"
Helen shook her head.
"Whose idea was this?"
"This was all Julian's idea,"
Percy said, pointing to the big guy. Julian came over, taking Helen's hand and putting it on Covrain's.
"I just wanted to do something special for you two. I didn't know how to do it, but Asti and Percy helped. And then when we heard that Ken and Jacole were getting promised..."
"Yes, who told you all that?"
Jacole pointed to one of her cousins.
"Dekira, were you the one?"
"It was Suki Ankara."
Dekira laughed.
"She wanted to know more about the Asian babe you have spent time with."
Percy chuckled. "She came to the bakery."
"Speaking of,"
Rach said, rolling out the fantastic cake she had made.
"I think I may have outdone myself on this one."
Covrain burst out laughing.
"Of course. Late delivery of bread indeed."
"My apologies for the deception, Lieutenant."
"Most accepted, Mrs. Reinax," Covrain said.
Helen shook her head.
"All this really wasn't necessary."
Despite that, Percy was seeing the grandest smiles he had seen from her and Kenneth for months. The two of them had suffered probably the most at the hands of the Firewings, and anything he could do to make their lives brighter, he would. Percy had let them down that night. They, and Alma, who seemed much less troubled by his abuse from the mages, had fought to cover his escape so he could rescue Rach. They had been captured and tortured for his sake, for his family, and he could never repay that debt. But he would keep trying.
"Everything is necessary for you all," he said.
He looked at the assembled crowd, the friends who had been at the core of this crew, this family, who had fought to protect North Seleth, the neighbours whom they had helped, folks he had known all his life, and the new faces like Jacole's relatives and even Covrain's mother and grandmother, quietly talking by the doorway. Percy could even swear he saw Inanja Lesk limping partway down the stairs and then turning back up. He was amazed the man had survived. But he was amazed any of them had survived this long, given the odds.
"I just want to say one thing," Percy said, taking a beer mug from the bar. "And then if anyone else wants to make a speech, they're welcome. But we do have a few musicians here tonight who've promised to play something lively and danceable, and I imagine you'd all prefer that to my ramblings."
"Yes,"
someone called out.
"Go on,"
Asti said. Percy held up his mug and climbed up on a chair.
just about everyone in this room. We all have been through some terrible hardship. The fire in Hulver Alley, the riots on election night, the fight against the mages, St. Bridget Square. Kimber muttered a quiet prayer and touched her forehead. And despite that, we are still here, and we have been blessed. Alma's shop recovered from the fire. This pub here, still standing strong. Kess's Meat and Cheeses, the Junk Avenue Bakery. The Ranax Gadgetarium, Julian shouted. We are here. We are standing tonight to celebrate these two couples, because we have been a neighbourhood together. We have stood strong together. We have lost a few friends too, and I hope that their judgments were kind, and the saints are letting them watch us now. But we have all been very blessed to be able to be together. Blessings of neighbours, blessings of friends, blessings of family.
Are you crying, Versie?
Rach asked him. He wiped the moisture from his face. I just wanted to express how lucky I feel to be here with you all, and grateful that the saints have led an old that... He remembered Kovrain was here, and was still a constable. An old scoundrel like me has such things, and thus... I'm sorry, one last thing. Thus, Helen and Jarrett, Kenneth and Jacole, if you all can love each other even half as much as I love the people in this room, well, your marriages will be deeply blessed indeed. He looked to Helen, whose eyes were watered up.
All right, you fool, get off that chair. There's apparently dancing to be done.
Folks were dancing, people laughing, talking, eating, drinking. Asti was glad to see it all, and Rach had been right. She truly had outdone herself with the cake. It had truly been a success, which was all Asti could ask for. The band had started out playing a few well-worn tavern songs, the sort any West Maradame folk know by heart, and people sang along and danced. Then when the band took a break, a couple of Jacole's family borrowed the instruments and played their own songs, which had the crowd completely stumped for a moment, until Jacole showed them how to dance to it.
"Quite unique festivities,"
Kovrain's grandmother said in Asti's earshot.
"I've not seen its like."
"Oh, I remember you throwing a few raucous dances in your day, Miss Josie," Pilsen Jin told her.
"I beg your pardon?"
Kovrain's grandmother asked.
"You've taken yourself too familiar with me, sir."
"Too familiar, that's a laugh. You're still that box girl at heart who'd..."
Asti jumped up and pulled Pilsen away from the woman before he said something inappropriate.
"Apologies, ma'am. He mistakes faces sometimes."
The grandmother said.
"I need to find my daughter wherever she's gone off to."
"She's sitting over there with Alma," Asti said, pointing to the table.
Though from Alma's expression, Asti wondered if he was about to ruin the man's hopes by sending the old woman over.
"Asti, why are your hands on me?" Pilsen said.
"Let's get you over to the bar," Asti said, guiding him to a stool. "Kimber, can we get a soft cider here, or even some tea?" Kimber nodded and came over.
"Pilsen, let me get you something. You just sit right there."
"Incredibly kind, madam, incredibly kind. Remind me why I know your face. Did you play Casseria in the production of The Hawk of Erin at the Whirly?"
Asti stepped back and found Velen Kolsch's absurdly pretty face far too close to Asti's. He must have dashed across the tap room.
"What are you doing to Pilsen?"
"I was getting him away from Kovrain's grandmother," Asti said, lowering his voice and pulling Velen to one side.
"Saints, he thought she was Josie."
Velen sighed.
"He's been doing that more and more. How bad has he been?" "Honestly?" Velen asked. "As long as he has a show, when he's in performance, he's fine. He's tremendous. But the rest of the time, he's... The only people he remembers a lot of the time are people from his youth. He thinks I'm Rendell a lot of the time."
Velen's voice cracked a little on that. Asti only knew Rendell's name from Pop's stories of the old days. Pilsen's paramour 40 years ago. Neither Pilsen nor Pop ever talked about how Rendell died back then.
"Sorry," Asti said. "It's how it is," Velen said. "But it's good to have him around people."
Velen went and sat next to Pilsen. A glass of wine was put in Asti's hand.
"I didn't think I needed this," he said to Helen, who had put it there. "Been watching you after the night," she said, "and if anyone did, I'm sure your future husband doesn't need you watching me." "Puh," Helen said.
"He knows full well not to be jealous of you."
"Thanks," he said, going to his seat back at the table he had been alone at.
Helen sat with him.
"Should you be dancing?"
"My feet can only take so much," she said. "So you pull all this just for me?"
and Kenneth and Jakal. And Jarrett? He's a good man, Asti said. Perhaps too good, at least to be in the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?